Good morning, everyone. This is Daisha Herbelock from the Science Media Center. I'd like to welcome you to this online briefing on the topic of soil carbon. I'll introduce our speakers in just a moment, but some housekeeping. If I could ask you to hold any questions you have for the end, we'll present. There are four speakers today, and I will moderate the Q&A session at the close. If the line begins to get noisy, I will mute all the other people who have dialed in, barring the person who's presenting. So if that's, I will, don't worry if you can't be heard, but I will unmute everyone for the questions at the end. If you need to raise your hand, if you have something, a question you want to make note of, there's a chat box in the upper left part of your screen. And if I could get those of you who are dialing in and have not synced your audio with your web conference yet, you will see on the web conference there's a four-digit code to dial in to sync your audio and web presentations. If you could do that now, that would be appreciated. Right, so getting underway, I'd like to introduce our four speakers. Our first speaker will be Dr. David Whitehead, who's a principal investigator in soil carbon research at the New Zealand Agricultural Greenhouse Gas Research Center and also belongs to Landcare Research. David leads a research program with a focus on measuring, modeling, and mitigating greenhouse gas emissions at Landcare, and he's based at Lincoln. David has co-authored more than 130 scientific research papers and has mentored postdoctoral fellows and PhD students and received a certificate acknowledging his contribution to the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize awarded to the IPCC. So congratulations, David, on that. Our second speaker will be Dr. Brent Clothier, who is at Plant and Food Research, the science group leader in systems modeling there. Dr. Brent Clothier has done his studies at Canterbury University and Massey University and is currently a Fellow of the Royal Society of New Zealand, as well as a Fellow of the Soil Science Society of America, the American Agronomy Society, and the New Zealand Soil Science Society, as well as the American Geophysical Union. Brent is now President of the New Zealand Soil Science Society and Science Leader of New Zealand's Comprehensive Soils Program, SLURI, S-L-U-R-I, Sustainable Land Use Research Initiative. Our third speaker will be Dr. Lewis Shipper, who's an Associate Professor of Earth and Ocean Sciences at Waikato University. He conducts research into the long-term changes in soil carbon and nitrogen and is focused on developing strategies to improve environmental performance while maintaining productive use of the land. He works with a range of CRIs and the New Zealand Agricultural Research Center on soil-related research. And our final speaker will be Dr. Frank Kelleher, who is principal investigator at soil carbon at the New Zealand Agricultural Greenhouse Gas Research Center as well, and also a principal scientist at Ag Research and a professor of soil science at Lincoln University. For over 25 years, the research has developed an understanding of greenhouse gas emissions and measurement methods, and he's contributed significantly to the development of New Zealand's agricultural greenhouse gas emissions inventories and inventory uncertainty assessment. He's currently chair of the Soil Carbon Network, Carbon Net. So, actually, apologies there, I've got the order slightly wrong. We've got David, then Lewis, then Brent, and then Frank. So if I could please hand over to David Whitehead now to begin our briefing.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for this opportunity this morning. I'm down here at Lincoln. It's a nice, clear day. At least it's not raining at the moment, but it's a bit overcast and cold. We this morning would like to discuss with you the issue of soil carbon. And we want to leave the impression with you that soil carbon is really important for New Zealand's agriculture and horticulture industries and for the economy of New Zealand as well. But we want to point out to you what we know about soil carbon, recognizing there are quite a lot of needs for future research to ask some of the critical questions about soil carbon. And we want to also give you the impression about the new collaborative research effort that we are undertaking. So the four of us this morning have put together this this presentation, and as you see on your screen, we are all from different organizations. There's quite a lot of expertise in soil carbon research in New Zealand, but the one thing we have in common is that we all are all contributing to the new Agriculture Research Center for Greenhouse Gas Mitigation Research. It's called the New Zealand Agriculture Greenhouse Gas Research Center. And I wanted to briefly, before we start, introduce what the centre's focus is about, because part of the effort this morning is to introduce you to the work of the centre and the possibilities where we're going to be working. Well, the center is a new initiative. It has a major focus, it's new funding, it has a major focus on mitigating agricultural greenhouse gas emissions from grazed pastoral systems in particular, with a focus on soil carbon, methane and nitrous oxide. These, of course, are all three major issues in terms of greenhouse gas regulation in New Zealand. We are not going to speak this morning about methane and nitrous oxide. We're going to focus on soil carbon. The centre was, as I said, it was new funding. It was opened by the Prime Minister on the 3rd of March with funding secured for 10 years. It's a virtual centre. It's a building there, as seen in the picture, based in Palmerston North. But we, as contributors to the centre, are based all over the country in our different laboratories. The main focus of the centre is on carbon dioxide, methane and nitrous oxide. When carbon dioxide, of course, the major causes of carbon dioxide production are from burning fossil fuels, but only small quantities from agriculture, whereas the methane and nitrous oxide are dominantly from agriculture. Methane is breathed out by animals in New Zealand, in rice paddies in other parts of the world, and some landfill sites as well. Nitrous oxide comes from nitrogen deposition on soils and re-emissions of nitrous oxide, a very low concentration but very potent greenhouse gas. So let's turn our attention now to carbon, soil carbon. And first of all, the question I wanted to ask was, well, why are we at all interested in soil carbon? I just want to make the point that most of the carbon in terrestrial systems is actually underground in the soil. It's not in the vegetation above. Two-thirds of it's below ground. And there are very, very large amounts of carbon stored in soils, up to 300 times the amount released from burning fossil fuels each year. So there's an enormous storage there, and we have to protect that and attempt to enhance it. The second point I want to make is that where does the soil carbon come from? Well, it's all been derived from decomposing plant material over the millennia, which is incorporated into the soil as organic matter. And Louis Schiffer will explain to us a little bit more about the difference between soil carbon and organic matter. So there are two compelling reasons that I see why we need to be interested in soil carbon. First of all, brought up a slide about as soil carbon is actually the way it came into the soil, but also there are large amounts lost from the soil as well through disturbance, erosion and leaching. It's an ongoing process where both intake and uptake are happening at the same time. The two reasons I'm coming to about the importance of soil carbon is that much of the carbon in New Zealand's systems is from historical land cover due to essentially forests were here for tens of thousands of years, which have built up a large amount of organic matter. And we, of course, have cleared quite a lot of those forest areas and converted them into agriculture. So why are we interested in soil carbon? Excuse me, that's the same slide again. Let's go to the next slide. Why is it important for New Zealand agriculture? First of all, 52% of merchantable exports are from agriculture. So agriculture is really important for New Zealand. It's 20% of the global domestic product. It's a major industry. But of course, as well as being a major industry, it's also a very large contributor to greenhouse gas emissions in New Zealand. In fact, it's responsible for 48% of our total emissions. So we have this sort of contradictory issue often, that it's really important for our economy, but also we have to accept that it's also contributing to greenhouse gas emissions. Sorry, I was waiting for the next slide to come up. Now, soil organic matter is critical for the agricultural industries because it's involved in storage of nutrients, and we need carbon in soils to maintain them as a healthy, functioning and resilient soils. That's the first principal reason why it's so important to us. The second reason is that changes in carbon are really important for us. We could lose carbon as well as we can gain carbon, but if we were able to change soil carbon by this very small minimum detectable limit that we can measure in the laboratory across the 14 million hectares for all of New Zealand, it does represent a value in terms of carbon trading of $5 billion. So there's a very large opportunity associated with that. But the liability is also associated with that opportunity. It's not, it can be lost just as easily as it can be gained. So there are major challenges in measuring and verifying change in soil carbon. That's the difficulties. Louis will explain a little more about that, and Frank will talk about that more as well. We have to understand what is driving change in soil carbon. In order to do that, we need to have substantial new collaborative research. There are major benefits if this research is successful to the economy of New Zealand. But we need to point out that it's not a simple process. We have to be very cautious in interpreting and substantiating the opportunities for increasing soil carbon storage in New Zealand. I've said that very small increases in storage are worth a lot in terms of carbon benefits, but we will explain to you it's not easy to do that. It's difficult to make changes and to verify those changes. So our approach in the centre is to initiate a new major research initiative through the centre that I explained. On the right-hand side, all of the collaborators from all of the research organisations in the agricultural and horticultural sector in New Zealand are involved. And I'd just like to point out the issues that we are going to focus on. We will be returning to these later on after Frank has spoken. I'm trying to get the very last slide now. I seem to not be able to get the my very last slide. Ah, there it is, my very last slide to come up. Just find that. Yep, there it is. And these are the issues, questions that we're asking in terms of what the research centres is doing. First of all, what are the upper limits to carbon storage in New Zealand? How can we define what those are on a national scale? Secondly, how much carbon is actually stored in New Zealand soil as opposed to how much could be stored? Are there manipulation management practices that we can do to ensure that we retain that soil or increase the soil carbon? We need to understand the drivers in order to know whether we can manipulate those amounts of soil carbon. And finally, is there an acceptable accounting system we can develop which will verify carbon changes in response to management practice so that we can judge whether the management practice is a success or not? Thank you. That concludes my part of the presentation.
Thank you very much, David. And I'll hand on to our second speaker, Lewis Shipper.
Hi, thanks very much for being here. I want to focus specifically on changes or soil carbon in New Zealand pastoral systems. I'm going to reinforce some of the points that David made about why soil carbon is important, and then talk a little bit about how much we have in New Zealand in comparison to the rest of the world, and then lastly touch on whether soil carbon is changing in New Zealand pastoral systems. As David said, I just want to bring up these two terms, soil organic matter and soil carbon, because they get used interchangeably, and they are very similar. The difference being that soil organic matter also includes other elements like hydrogen, oxygen and nitrogen and so on, and then as well as having carbon in it. So the rule of thumb, roughly 50% of soil organic matter is soil carbon. So they're the same sort of thing, but you just need to recognise that half of the soil organic matter is actually as carbon. Why is soil carbon important? The diagram on the left-hand side shows the amounts of carbon in the different parts of the terrestrial ecosystem. And what you can see is the amount of carbon that is stored in soils is larger than all of the plants and all of the atmosphere combined. So there are large amounts of carbon in soil. If you decrease the carbon content of soil, you can increase the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. And conversely, if you can fix carbon dioxide into soil, that is a sink or a decrease in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And many countries around the world are looking at ways of storing more carbon in soils to offset their total greenhouse gas emissions. It's also important from a soil quality or soil health perspective, and this can be overlooked. Soil organic matter is really important for holding on and storing nutrients in soils for plant uptake. It is also critical for maintaining water storage in soils. It provides the structure, the nice crumbs that you get, good tilth of your soil so you can get good root penetration. And lastly, I have there that it's important for the life support system. It supports all the microbial activity in the soils because it acts as the food source. So on to how much we have in New Zealand. On the left-hand side there, there's a diagram with a tree there showing the amount of carbon that we have in soil on average around the world, and that's 100 tonnes of carbon per hectare. That seems like a lot, but if you look on the left-hand, the right-hand side of the map of New Zealand, what we see there is different colours representing different amounts of carbon held in soil throughout New Zealand. A couple of things to note, it's really highly variable, not only at a national scale, but even within a paddock it can range enormously between soil types. You'll see the legend there goes from red to a deep blue, with storage of carbon ranging between 50 tonnes per hectare and 500 tonnes. The second point I want to push forward on this is that the amount of carbon in New Zealand soils tends to be rather higher than the amount globally. So we've got a lot of carbon in New Zealand soils and it varies. So what controls the amount of carbon that you've got in a soil? It's a matter of balance. Plants fix carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere through photosynthesis. They drop their leaves or their roots turn over, and that can become incorporated into soil organic matter, soil carbon. This is then respired out of the system and contributes back to CO2. So you have this continual input of carbon and a continual loss of carbon from the soil. And you can imagine that different types of vegetation are going to give you different amounts of photosynthetic input, and the different types of soil will lead to different amounts of loss of carbon from the soil through respiration. And in New Zealand, we haven't kept the amount of vegetation or types of vegetation constant throughout time. We started with a mostly forested land, it then got burnt, and we went to kind of scrubland and grasslands, and then more recently we've seen the establishment of high-producing pastures, as you can see on the far right-hand side. So this has had quite large changes, impacts on soil. Just to summarise that all then, different land uses and management practices on different soils end up with different amounts of stored carbon content in that soil, and this is due to the difference between the inputs through fixation by plants, photosynthesis, and to a lesser degree, imports of other carbon, feed and manures. The difference between that and the outputs are decomposition, respiration, and even exports. There's nearly up to a tonne of carbon removed in dairy systems in milk every year per hectare. And all of this together determines the amount of carbon in soil. And this is just an illustration that shows the difference. This on the right-hand side here, we have a picture of what looks like three very different soils, but they're in fact the same soil, but with different land uses on it. On the far left of that picture is a native forest, then pasture, and then cropland. And you can see the cropland's a lot paler. It has a lot less carbon content in it due to the ongoing disturbance in that system. So management matters. Okay, on to then what we see in New Zealand pastoral systems. Has carbon changed over the last couple of decades or so? This is some work that we've been doing with Landcare Research. You'll see a map on the right-hand side there with dots on it. Those are sites that we have sampled in the last 4 or 5 years down to about a metre or so and measured carbon content at all those sites. The reason we went to each of those sites is that they had been sampled about 30 years ago and the same measurements made in the same way. And by comparing what we measure now with what we measured in the past, we can see where the carbon has changed. And you will see that we looked at different management practices, dairying on flatland, hill country, dry stock, tussocks, and flatland, dry stock. And we looked at a range of different soil orders, which are listed on the left-hand side. What did we find? Surprisingly, this data is for the top 30 centimetres of the soil profile. Dairying systems on flatland, on average, for that time period had lost about 0.7 of a tonne per hectare per year, and this was substantially and significantly different from no change, so a real change. Dry stock systems, there was no real change there. It says minus 0.3, but this was not really different from zero. Hill country in the North Island, we saw a gain of about half a tonne per hectare per year, and this was significant. And tussock grasslands in the South Island, grazed by dry stock, no change. The question now becomes, have these systems essentially reached a new steady state, or are there ongoing gains or losses? And we're trying to figure that out at the moment. Our gut feeling would be that they probably reach some sort of a new equilibrium, a new steady state, so that the losses or gains may not be continuing to occur. But we need to check that out. We also need to understand why these changes might occur, and we're doing research on that, mainly so that we can then identify ways to maybe enhance gains or decrease losses into the future. So just to summarise then, soil carbon is both can act as both a sink or a source of atmospheric carbon dioxide, but we mustn't forget that it's also critical for soil quality and soil health. The amount of carbon that you have in soils depends on the plants, the soils, and the inputs and outputs that you have in any particular system can lead to either the accumulation or loss of soil carbon. And we have demonstrated that different land use activities on pastures have led to both gains and to losses. And we're trying to understand if that's continuing or whether they've reached a steady state. One last point. There's further background information that can be found at that website link there. It's a paper that I wrote for the New Zealand Science Teacher that gives further background on what I've just talked about. Thank you very much.
And I'll make a copy of that PDF available in the resource library for download as well. Thank you, Louis. I'll hand on to Brent Clothier now.
Thank you very much. I would like to extend what Louis has talked about and broaden the discussion into horticulture and talk about some of the work that we've been carrying out on Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry funded projects on carbon footprinting, and also some work that we're carrying out through the Sustainable Land Use Research Initiative, which is known as SLURRY. So I'll first talk about carbon footprints of products and soil carbon. What role does that have in there? Then talk about in horticulture the soil carbon dynamics in orchards, which are different because of the deeper rooting systems, and how orchard management practices can impact on soil carbon. And then just to extend some discussion from what Louis was talking about around soil health and soil carbon. And so this work provides a background to what we've been doing in Slurry, and it works to complement what's going on with the New Zealand Agricultural Greenhouse Gas Research Centre. Carbon footprints are increasing, and supermarket chains are starting to inquire and use carbon footprints on labels. And we've been carrying out some work in conjunction with Landcare Research using life cycle assessment of products from where they're grown right through to the other side of the world where they're consumed, and some waste is generated over there. Presently, there's only one official protocol for carbon footprinting of products, and that comes from the British Standards Institute. It's known as the PAS 2050, the publicly available specification 2050. It specifically notes that soil carbon is very important, but it has concerns about how it can be measured, so it excludes it. However, under draft through the International Standards Organization, as you can see in the bottom of that slide, a protocol is being developed on the quantification of carbon footprints of products. They intend to include soil carbon in the carbon footprint of products. So the changes that go on in the production system could well be incorporated into the carbon footprinting protocols. So what does that mean? Well, if we have a look, for example, in a kiwi fruit orchard, we have done the carbon footprint of a kiwi fruit consumed in Europe without soil carbon, but we've been carrying out some work under a sustainable farming fund project looking at two orchards of kiwi fruit next door to each other. One was 10 years old and one was 25 years old. In the top 50 centimetres of the soil, there was no significant difference between the soil carbon contents. However, at depth, between 10 and the 25-year period, there was more carbon stored in that bottom depth. So what does that mean? It means when you add it up that the young orchard had 139 tonnes of carbon per hectare. Remember, Louis said it was about 100. Well, in this case, down to a metre, we've measured it at 139, whereas in the old orchard, it was 145 tonnes of carbon per hectare. So it seems to us, in this case, and we're extending this work, that the carbon is being sequestered at that depth at a rate of about 0.4 tonnes of carbon per hectare per year. And I just put the little photo there of why that's happening down at depth. The root mass is increasing down there and worms are transporting the carbon further down. I'd also now like to talk about how land management can alter the carbon balance, and just extending on what Louis was saying, the carbon is first captured by photosynthesis and then it is deposited on the soil as litter. And so on the right-hand side you can see an integrated orchard, and these are orchards that are cheek by jowl, and they developed some 13 years ago. One went down the organic route and the other went down the integrated route. And you can see that over those 13 years they've developed here down to just 30 centimetres, quite different levels of soil carbon. The reason being is that in the organic orchard, the inorganic fertilisers cannot be used, so the fertility in the orchard there is maintained by bringing in compost. And so over that period of time, the soils have developed different levels of soil carbon because the carbon dynamics of those orchards have been managed in different ways. And what I'd like to look at now is what this means, and we've got an X-ray tomograph of what the soil looks like, and this bears out what Louis is saying. You can see on the left the organic orchard, same soil pedologically in the sense of parent material, but it's developed a very different pore structure and crumb structure, aggregate structure. And I think Dacia will say there is a PowerPoint available which will show this as an animation. What does that mean when you look inside that and apply some tomography to get out the macropores? And this is essentially the ease with which the soil can breathe and the ease with which water can flow through the soil. And you can see the macroporosity in the organic orchard on the left is much higher at 8.3% than it is in the integrated orchard on the right at just 2.9. And so you can see how the different filtering and buffering and breathing characteristics of that soil has been changed simply through the addition of soil carbon. So I'd like to conclude by just reiterating in saying that in fact we can manage soil to reduce the carbon footprint of the products we produce from the soil. We can manage the soil, if we get it right, to sequester carbon, and we can manage the carbon in the soil to increase soil health. Thank you.